Foundation, whose scientists study the origin and nature of life, including finding planets around other stars using the Kepler telescope. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to Big Picture Science episode Born Legacy. If you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science, you'll find episodes in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because you don't like to put on those earbuds and be in an internet bubble, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station's not on that list, consider letting them know you like this show.
And to reach us directly with your comments, throw in some faint praise and email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
Loud and clear down here.
What the hell's going on with this interphone system today?
This is WHFR Dearborn. You are listening to the magic of radio.
Welcome to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Hi, I'm your host Lynn, and today we're discussing ovarian cancer and an upcoming fundraising event with Julie Bates. Julie, thank you so much for being here with us today on Impact.
Thank you.
Okay, try that one more time.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, you need a little more oomph. I can do that. All righty. Let's find out about you. Tell us about you. You are a 5.5-year ovarian cancer survivor. That is incredible and terrifying all at the same time.
Sure is. I will tell you a little bit about it. I'm also a 26-year Dearborn resident. I am married. I have two girls who went through the Dearborn school system and then went on to Michigan State and have now graduated. But my battle with ovarian cancer started in December of 2011. I had some symptoms of bloating and constipation that I thought were because it was the end of my teaching semester that I just wasn't drinking enough water. So when I was at school, I just drink a lot. And when I get home, I kind of forgot a little bit. So I made an effort to drink a lot of water. And I noticed that in early January, when I went back to school, the symptoms continued. I went to an urgent care doctor to see if it was an issue like a blocked bowel or something like that. And he told me, no, just go eat more fiber. So unfortunately, that's something that a lot of ovarian cancer patients find, is that it's very difficult to diagnose. The symptoms for ovarian cancer can be symptoms for many other issues, like menopause for one, just period bloating, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times ovarian cancer is not diagnosed in the early stages.
So how long was it from the time you first sought medical advice until the time that you actually had your diagnosis?
Well, it was January of 2012 when I first went to the doctor. And it's kind of embarrassing to just go to a doctor and have them say, eat more fiber, and you turn around and go home. So I thought, okay, well, let's see how I can handle this on my own. For the next 2 months, I did every kind of cleansing regimen that you could think of, but I still thought I was constipated.
Okay.
And at one point, one of my girlfriends called me and she said, Julie, I just watched the doctors. Tell me your symptoms. So, okay. So I started listing my symptoms, and I could hear her typing away on her computer in the background, putting them into a online medical diagnose program. And She said, okay. She said, you could just be bloated, but your symptoms could also be for ovarian cancer. Oh, wow. And I said, oh, come on, you're scaring me. Don't say that. She said, well, I'm really scared. She said, promise me you'll go to the doctor tomorrow. So I did, and I did promise, and then I did go to the doctor the next day. And because I joke around when I'm nervous, I walked into the doctor's office and I said, I'm here for you to tell me I don't have ovarian cancer. And she said, well, I can't do that until we see what's going on with you. So she did a number of tests, she did an x-ray, and sent me home. At noon that same day, I get a call from the doctor, which is quite unusual. Mm-hmm. And she said, from what we are able to see, there is something on your ovaries, and you need to see a gynecologist right away. And I told her, I said, you're scaring me. And she said, I'm scared too. You need to see a gynecologist. Well, the hospital system that I see my doctors through is pretty large, so I called to see when I could get the next appointment, and they had a cancellation that afternoon. My husband drove me down to see this gynecologist, who is not my normal GYN. And once again, I told her, I'm here for you to tell me I don't have ovarian cancer. Well, she smiled and said, you know, it's very rare to have ovarian cancer. And she says, likely it's something else, but let's see what we can do. So she did an exam, and she did feel something on my ovaries, but she said, you know, these could be fibroids. Do you have a history of fibroids in your family? And I remembered that when my mom was in her 50s, she had fibroids, and she had a hysterectomy, I thought, due to that. But my mom was on vacation, so I couldn't call and find out exactly what she'd had. So this doctor said, you know, I wouldn't worry about it. This is a Friday afternoon. Don't worry about it over the weekend, but make an appointment to see to have an ultrasound done. Okay, so I made the appointment for the ultrasound for the following Tuesday. I went to that appointment, asked the ultrasound technician, you know, what can you see? She goes, well, it's really for the doctor to tell you what I can see. But we're almost done. So I went home. I woke up the next morning and my bloating was so bad that I was in pain, and I asked my husband to take me to the ER. He said, let's just go to the ER. Maybe they can help figure out what this is, because I've been to all these doctors now.
Did it ever go down?
No.
In between? Okay.
No. And we went to the ER, and I told the nurses there and the doctor that I thought I was constipated. How quickly I forget about the cancer that we had just talked about the previous week. And they gave me the stuff to drink that you drink before you have a colonoscopy so that it empties your entire self out. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, you should probably have a CT scan, but if you wait today to have it, it'll take a couple hours. And I looked at my husband. I was like, I don't really feel like waiting here. So let's just go home and I'll schedule an appointment for the CT scan. Well, the next morning I woke up and even more pain. And I'm not one to rush to the ER for things, but I said, you know what, we need to go back. And I had the same doctor, and she looked at me and she said, did you drink that stuff I gave you last night? And I said, yeah. And she said, you're more bloated than you were before. So she was able to get me in for a CT scan right away. And then you go back to your little room and wait for the results. And about 45 minutes later, she comes in. And this was a doctor who had a nice, healthy complexion. She walked in pale as a ghost and looking scared. And I just looked at my husband and he looked at me and she said, I have something very serious to talk to you about. You have ovarian cancer. And you hear that and you freeze and you realize your life as you knew it has now been changed. Yes. The rug got pulled out from under you. It's your life is different now. But one thing that she said that was very comforting was that she said, you are my number one priority right now. I've already made a call down to the director of women's health to find out what the next step is. We'll get you an appointment, the next available appointment, to see who you need to see. So it was a good idea to go to the ER the second time, because then they were able to schedule what I needed to have scheduled. I looked at her and I said, I'm ready to go downtown now. Just take this out of me. I want it gone. Mm-hmm. She smiled and said, you know, it's not that quick. Came back a little while later and said that I had an appointment the following day, which was a Friday, with my doctor. Can I say his name?
Sure.
Okay. Dr. Robbie Hanna at Henry Ford. And I feel very fortunate that he was the doctor who was on duty the day that I had the appointment, because we have since gotten along very well. He has the same sense of humor I do, and as serious a subject as cancer is, I need to make myself laugh along the way sometimes, because otherwise all you can do is cry. Yep. So he walked in the room at my appointment and said, I'll be right with you. I've already read all of your file. I've looked at your CT scan results. I'm going to be able to help you. And when he came back in the room, I asked him, I said, okay, what are we going to do? What's going to happen? He said, well, I'm going to treat you like I would treat my sister. So that was comforting. But then smart aleck me asks him, it's like, do you like your sister? Turns out he does. And has treated me, I feel, as if I was family from that day 5.5 years ago.
That's so important, to have a doctor that you like, a doctor you trust.
Yes, yes. I should mention that he is a gynecologic oncologist. People, when they have breast cancer, for instance, will go to see a surgeon for the surgery and then an oncologist later, who are usually two different doctors. Because GYN oncology is such a specialty, there are specific doctors who have studied just gynecologic oncology. So he was my doctor from the surgery through all of my treatments. And that, I think, is a little unusual for people who don't know about GYN cancers. The next week, I had my surgery scheduled. The day before I had it scheduled, one of my friends came over and she looked at me and she couldn't believe how bloated I'd gotten by that time. It had increased even more. I felt like I was 9 months pregnant, and I had had two babies, so I knew what 9 months pregnant felt like. And it was just, I was ready to have this come out. So here I am, 48 years old. I have a daughter who's a junior in high school and a daughter who's a sophomore in college. And of course, what's going through your head is, and am I going to be here to see them graduate from high school? Will I be here to watch them graduate from college? And I have to say, I'm very thankful that here I am and I have seen them both graduate from college. Anyway, during the 6-hour surgery, they not only found several large masses of cancer, they also took 13 liters of fluid out of my abdomen. Imagine 6.5 2-liter bottles of pop. And when I do that, I just can't imagine where it all was. But they took 13 liters of fluid out of me.
No wonder it felt so heavy. It was.
It was.
Yeah.
Indeed. So I was in the hospital for a week. It's a major surgery. They cut you open from top to bottom because they want to make sure that the cancer hasn't spread any farther. I was very fortunate that it had not spread to lymph nodes or gotten onto other parts of the bowels or kidneys or liver. So that was all good news. after I'd been home for 2 weeks, I had a port put in. For those of you who don't know what a port is, it's a metal device that gets put into your chest or sometimes your arm that they will then use to access when they give you intravenous chemo. And it's a lot easier in the long run to have a port than to have your veins poked every time you have to have chemotherapy or every time you need a blood test. So that's been a positive thing to have. But I remember going back to the doctor for the checkup and for him to put the port in, and he started talking about chemo, and I hadn't thought that far. And I looked at him, I said, I don't want to do chemo. He goes, you sat there and told me you want to be here for your girls to grow up. You have to have chemo. So I did. I had the first, the standard of care for ovarian cancer are 6 chemotherapy treatments of 2 different drugs called Taxol and carboplatin. You lose your hair. Right about week 3, it all falls out at once. I was nauseous for the whole time. My bones ached, which is one of the side effects of the Taxol. But I was fighting cancer. And as long as I knew what I was doing, that I could take it. So that ended my first round of chemo. And what people don't realize, I think, is that finishing chemo is almost scarier than starting chemo, because while you're on these drugs, you're fighting your cancer. And when they tell you that you don't need it anymore, then you're not fighting it anymore. So I asked my doctor about that, and there was a clinical trial available. For those of you who don't know what a clinical trial is, it's used to test new drugs or new uses of drugs. In this case, there was a specific drug that had been used in other cancers, and they wanted to see if it could combat ovarian cancer as well, and have fewer side effects. So the clinical trial I was on lasted from August of 2012 until August of 2013. At that point, to see how successful the clinical trial was, then they give you another CT scan to see if there's any cancer showing. And darn it, 6 weeks after I finished the clinical trial, they did the CT scan and that showed cancer. Hmm. So that was my first recurrence of the ovarian cancer.
That fast.
Yes. And I was very angry because I thought the clinical trial didn't work. My doctor said it's very possible it did work, just it kept the cancer away a little longer than it might have otherwise. So we really don't know if it worked on me or not. Okay. That November of 2013, I started a new regimen of drugs, and that's also standard of care, is that after the first time, especially if you've had a recurrence fairly soon, you don't use the same drugs again, even if they work. There was another drug they used. It was called Gemzar and carboplatin. I took that for 7 months until May of 2014. And then the next CT scan showed what the doctors call NED, no evidence of disease. So it's like saying you're in remission, but I think it's kind of covering them a little bit because they can't see any disease. So we're going to say it's no evidence of disease, but
You're not sure. Yeah.
There could be little pieces of cancer floating around in your abdomen, or could have gotten to other parts of your body. So that was May of 2014. It was a big year. We had My older daughter graduated from college. It was my 25th wedding anniversary year. My mom turned 80. So we went on a cruise, a family cruise, which was really nice because it was just a way to not think about being sick anymore.
Right.
It's very important, especially when you're going through treatment, to find ways to forget about being a cancer patient and to find things that make you happy and that fulfill you, because otherwise you think of yourself as some sick person who can't do anything except sit around feeling sorry for themselves. So
that's not your style.
No, it's not. I tried to keep up with as many things as I'd done before, which wasn't quite possible, but I tried. When I got home from the cruise, so we're talking about June of 2014 now, my doctor put me on a drug called Avastin. And Avastin is like a maintenance drug. Its purpose is to keep blood vessels from forming, to feed the cancer cells. So it's, in a sense, starving the cancer. And I was on the Avastin for 16 months, which took us to about January of 2016, when my cancer number went up again. They did another CT scan and found out that cancer was back again. So this is my second recurrence then, about a year and a half ago now. And we wanted to start, obviously, on a new chemo regimen as soon as possible. Well, what the Avastin had done is lowered my platelet count. Platelets are the part of your blood that forms a clot that helps you stop bleeding when you cut yourself. My platelet count had gotten dangerously low. And if you were to compare my platelet count to yours, a healthy person, it would be low anyway. But it got dangerously low for a cancer patient. So before we could start on the new chemo, we had to figure out why the platelet count was low.
So that's not even really the new chemo. You're talking about bumping yourself, cutting yourself, anything like that could be very, very dangerous.
Exactly. And, you know, I had to tell my family and my friends that if I ever fall and hit my head, you need to take me to an ER right away, because there could be internal bleeding and we wouldn't even know about it. So yes, there was a big concern. They tell you not to use razors to shave your legs. They tell you, you know, don't climb on a chair. I still did both of those. But it's kind of nerve-wracking when you realize that your body isn't doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Right.
And since this wasn't technically ovarian issues, I had to see a hematologist. And the first thing she said is that, well, we have to make sure you don't have leukemia.
Oh, wow.
Because unfortunately, when you're taking chemotherapy, it's a poison you're putting in body to kill the cancer.
Right.
And it can have unexpected side effects. So
you're telling me this story, and I did not see that coming. Did you see that coming?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. So she ran a number of tests, and I was lucky I had my port that day, because she took 26 vials of blood out of me to run who knows what all tests, and then set me for a bone marrow biopsy. Well, you know, you hear all kinds of scary things about bone marrow biopsies, how painful they are and everything else. So I was scared. Had an appointment for that within about a week and a half. And it's a little strange. They numb your hip, and then they put this tool in. And it seemed to me it was almost like when you're opening a wine bottle and you're screwing the cork in, because she's just turning this thing to get it through my hip bone, mm-hmm. so that they can then take a biopsy of the bone marrow. And I have to say, it didn't hurt as much as I thought it would, which makes me wonder just how much I've been through, if that didn't hurt as much as I thought it would. But I was fortunate that it came back clear, that there was no, at least leukemic reason for my platelets to be low. And the doctor suggested a round of steroids that sometimes just helps people get their platelets up. So I tried a very high dose round of steroids for about 6 weeks, and that didn't do anything. And her next suggestion was a drug called rituximab, I believe, which is a monoclonal antibody. You may have heard that term thrown around. I don't know if maybe just people who are at the doctor a lot have heard that thrown around. But it's not a chemotherapy drug. It's supposed to hit a specific part of your body. So 4 weeks of the monoclonal antibody and my platelets went up, which allowed me to start chemotherapy again. That was in March of 2016. And my cancer number was doing pretty good until September, when it went up a little bit, and did another CT scan and found, I don't know if you want to hear all this, and found a cyst near my spleen, which could have been pretty dangerous if it had been like inside the spleen, but luckily it wasn't. The cyst was drained twice, once in December, once in March, and I was still on this third round of chemo. It was called Doxil. And my numbers kept going up and down, and not sure what it was. At my doctor's appointment around March of this year now, 2017, my doctor said, there are some new drugs out, and I want to test your tumor. And I said, you mean the tumor you took out 5 years ago? And he said, yes, you know, Henry Ford saves them for 10 or 15 years. I forgot what they've told me.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either until then.
Right.
So they took out from their frozen room part of my tumor and had it tested. Now, one thing I didn't mention is after I had been diagnosed, I went through genetic testing to see if I had any kind of cancers that would be passed down to my children. And it came back with no mutations detected. So of the tests that were available at that time, I didn't have anything that they knew was hereditary. But what's interesting is that you can have a hereditary cancer, I believe they call it somatic or germline, or you could have a somatic mutation, which comes later in your body after you're born. And those are not hereditary, which is good. But it turned out that there was a mutation, a BRCA2 mutation in my tumor. And the reason I mentioned BRCA is that some people may have heard, breast cancer patients, people who know people with breast cancer may have heard of BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutations. I believe Angelina Jolie found that she had the BRCA1 mutation from her mother, which is why she went through her mastectomy, double mastectomy, and I believe a hysterectomy too, to lower her risk of having breast or ovarian cancer. So I guess luckily for me, with this mutation, there is a specific drug that combats this mutation. And my doctor explained how it works, and I don't think I can explain it well, but basically what it does is it looks for cells that have this particular mutation and it tells them to die.
Okay.
So it's one of the things that I learned about cancer after getting it is that it's a proliferation of cells. Your cells in your body are always growing and doubling themselves. And with cancer, they just keep going too far.
Mm-hmm.
And they're growing faster and multiplying faster than normal cells.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So it's good that I have this, that they have come up with this drug that I started in July. It's called Rubreca. It's just for people with this specific mutation of BRCA2, which I think is just amazing. And as far as side effects, I've been pretty lucky. You know, I kept my hair. I'm exhausted, but fatigue is a symptom for most chemotherapy drugs, especially for someone who's been on almost continuously on a drug for 5.5 years. Mm-hmm. Nausea is intermittent.
Okay.
But for the most part, I can do the things I want to do with what my new normal is. You know, my old normal before cancer was a lot more energetic, though after cancer normal is not so much.
Yeah.
A little different.
Yeah.
But you get used to what your new normal is.
But even having, with your new normal, having the ability to do some of the things, or mostly all the things that you did before, that has to help mentally so much.
Absolutely.
Because that takes a toll on your energy level too.
Yes.
Depression. And it's not having a pity party. It's the reality of what's going on.
Yes.
And you don't know what happens when you wake up tomorrow. Is something else going to be swollen? You know, is it a trip to the ER? You don't know until you actually get up the next day.
Exactly. And I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but I have to say that the first recurrence of the cancer was almost worse mentally than the initial diagnosis.
Sure.
You know, you hear you have ovarian cancer. My doctor said, this is a bump on the road of your life. You're going to be okay. And that first recurrence makes you realize that I just might have this for the rest of my life. And one thing about ovarian cancer is that 80% of women who are diagnosed and go into remission do have a recurrence. They treat it like a chronic disease. When it comes back, we'll just do something for it again. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm on the Rubreca. Instead of an infusion, it is pills. So I take 2 pills twice a day. And so far, it's worked some. My cancer number has come down a bit. My doctor did say it would take a couple months to kick in, so that's always hard to wait because
right.
you want instant results.
Of course. But on the plus side, you're able to do this at home, too.
Yes.
You don't have to go to a clinic for the port to receive a fluid version of the chemo.
Exactly. Although I have to say, I used to enjoy that. I went to a small chemo clinic, the Henry Ford Fairlane Clinic, and there are 7 or 8 nurses there that over 5 years I've gotten to know very well.
Sure.
And it was almost a social thing for me to go. I hate to say I miss it, but I miss it a little bit.
Okay.
But you're right. I get to take my pills at home. I don't have to sit in a chair for 5-6 hours and get poison put into me, which I try not to visualize it that way. One of the things I read when I first was diagnosed is that when you're getting chemo, you shouldn't visualize it going to the cancer cells and killing them. And I try that sometimes, but.
Right. That's probably hard to be upbeat all the time.
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
It is. But we make jokes. We try to do the things we used to do. I feel like it's brought my family closer together.
That's a blessing.
Yes. Yes. I always thought when my kids were growing up, or hoped that I would have a good relationship with them when they became adults. I think having the cancer kind of cemented that, mm-hmm. that we talk. One daughter is in Chicago area now, and we talk a couple times a week or text or Facebook chat or whatever. My other daughter lives in Detroit. I talk to her several times a week, usually see her once a week or every other week. And I don't know if that'd be the case if we hadn't gone through this together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. You need a little break?
Sure.
Okay. We'll take a little break for some important messages and a little bit of music right here on Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. Today's special guest is ovarian cancer survivor Julie Bates.
Hi, I'm Bill Keith, host of Light from the Underground, and I'm a volunteer DJ.
Hi, this is Lynn, host of No Boys Allowed, and I am a volunteer DJ.
Hi, this is Pat Frisco from the Spirits Rejoice program, and I am a volunteer DJ.
This is Earl Jones, host of Jazz Horizons, and I am a volunteer DJ.
Hey, this is Chelsea Marie, host of Dinner with Chelsea, and all of us DJs here at WHFR volunteer our time so that we can bring you independent, commercial-free radio. Thank you for listening and supporting our station.
The WHFR Annual Record Show is just around the corner, and we are accepting applications for vendors. Our 10th Annual Record Show is taking place on Saturday, October 21st, on the campus of Henry Ford College, and this is your chance to be part of it. If you're a vendor selling tapes, CDs, or vinyl records, or if you have other related items such as memorabilia or handcrafted goods, then you too can set up a shop for a day at this very popular and well-attended event. All the information, including a copy of the vendor contract, is available on our website, whfr.fm. Just click on the record show icon for all the information. If you have any questions, you can email us at whfr@hfcc.edu. The WHFR Annual Record Show is Saturday, October 21st, so reserve your vendor table now.
I'm Julie Bates, and I'm an ovarian cancer survivor. September is Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month. Saturday, September 16th, the Michigan Ovarian Cancer Alliance is sponsoring its 6th annual awareness event at the Village of Rochester Hills. Our event is called Wheels and Teal and is a combination 5K run, walk, and car show. We expect about 60 teal and turquoise cars from the 50s and 60s. We'd love to have you join us on Saturday, September 16th. To register or for more information, go to wheelsandteal.com. Online registration for the run walk is open now through Friday, September 15th. We also accept same-day registrations, or you're welcome to come just for the cars. For more information about the Michigan Ovarian Cancer Alliance, go to mioca.org.
How about that? That's like tricky stereo. All right, and we are back. You're listening to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. And Julie, we are so honored to have you here on WHFR today. Julie Bates is sharing her very personal story and her relationship with ovarian cancer. And she's going to kick it. She's going to kick. I can't say that word. But you know what she's going to kick.
Well, my daughter said I've kicked it a few times. We just have to kick it some more.
So. Until it's gone. Yeah. You mentioned earlier that once you're finished with a particular drug, that you go on to the next drug and the next drug. Is there ever a time when you go back to that first drug?
You know, that's a very good question. I believe that my doctor is looking for the drug that's going to totally kick the cancer for me. Mm-hmm. This Rubraca may or may not do it. We'll have to see. I do have friends who, after their initial round of the carboplatin and Taxol, when they had their recurrence, their doctors put them on the same drug again with the idea that it worked very well the first time.
Okay.
So for them, their remission was probably longer than mine. And a lot of it is up to the doctor's opinion, mm-hmm. I believe.
Of course.
And how well a patient tolerates a specific drug.
Right, right.
So I have friends who have been on the same regimen a couple times, and I have friends who have had different drugs. One of the things, though, ovarian cancer doesn't strike as many women as, say, breast cancer, so there aren't necessarily as many drugs available for ovarian cancer. There are clinical trials. When I mentioned my clinical trial, that they were trying a new drug to see if it would be a good drug for women with ovarian cancer. Unfortunately, you don't have the results of clinical trials till years afterwards,
because
what they're trying to see is a five-year survival rate after that, or what is the survival rate after having a drug, and you have to wait till someone's been off it for 5 or 10 years to see how they do and mm-hmm. how the drug did. So we've been very lucky that there have been 4, I believe, new ovarian cancer drugs that have come out in the last 8 to 9 months that have been pushed through by the FDA because they've had such phenomenal results in the clinical trials. Mm-hmm. So that's the Rubraca that I'm on is one of those drugs that was pushed through very quickly.
Okay. One thing, too, I wanted to ask about is when you went in with your initial symptoms, you're right, you're absolutely right, it could have been anything. What can we look for so that we can get there faster, so that I'm not sure exactly how to say that.
Well, I think I know how to say it. We want women to be diagnosed as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
Because women who are diagnosed in the first or second stage of ovarian cancer have a much higher survival rate than the women who are not diagnosed until the third or fourth stage. And I was in stage 3C, which means that the tumor was of a specific size.
I see.
And I think there's a little bit more to it than that, but I can't keep all the ABCs, 1, 2, 3, 4 straightened. But the difficult thing with ovarian cancer is that there is no early detection test. Mm-hmm. There's not a test like a mammogram that you can have done every year to determine whether or not you have ovarian cancer. And this is true whether you have a history of it in your family or not. I've been told that my sister and my daughters, there isn't a test for them, that they would just have to wait until they had symptoms. But there are some signs. Sometimes you might hear that ovarian cancer is a silent killer. And they say that because their symptoms can be masked as other symptoms for other issues.
Right, which is what you went through.
Right.
Yes.
Bloating, constipation, menopause, all of those things can be mistaken. Ovarian cancer can be mistaken for those things.
Does ovarian cancer have a group? Is it more common in, say, people who are 50 plus, or people who are 30 to 50, or people who are menopausal or not menopausal? Or is there any kind of something we can look at that way?
Yes, the highest rate of ovarian cancer diagnoses is for women who are, I believe, in their 50s.
Okay.
A lot of times it's postmenopausal, but sadly there have been girls as young as 8 who have been diagnosed with ovarian cancer.
Wow.
It's rare, but 8 12-year-olds, 15-year-olds have been diagnosed with ovarian cancer. In fact, I had the year I was teaching when I was diagnosed with the cancer, I had a student in one of my classes who I had had the semester before. I taught math for the earlier math class. And then in the second class I was teaching her, her attendance was sporadic. Her homework wasn't done like it had been before. And I was asking her, what's going on? Why are you so different in this class? And she goes, you know, I just haven't felt good. I've been going to the doctor a lot, trying to figure out what's wrong with me. That was probably February or March. I was diagnosed in March and didn't go back to work until the fall. And this same young lady, I think her name was Ashley, was in my class again. I said, oh, good to see you again. I was like, what happened to you? Where were you? And she said, you know what, Mrs. Bates? She said, I had ovarian cancer. I said, you're kidding me. She said, no, they caught it really early. Luckily, my doctor knew to test for it. It was stage one. I didn't have to have chemo, but she had ovarian cancer at the same time I did.
For heaven's sake.
And she was no more than 20.
Oh.
So luckily for her, her doctor knew what to look for.
Right.
There are some symptoms that if your listeners feel that they're having these symptoms for longer than 2 or 3 weeks, they should absolutely talk to their doctors about it, probably their GYNs about mm-hmm. it. One is bloating or pelvic or abdominal pain, feeling full more quickly than usual. You could have urinary symptoms. Maybe the urge to go is stronger than usual, or you go more frequently. Bowel issues, like I talked about earlier. One thing that, in hindsight, if I'd known this was a symptom, I would have realized right away is the feeling full mm-hmm. much sooner. We'd sit down for dinner, I'd have 3 or 4 bites, and I'd look at my family and say, I'm really full. I'm just going to go upstairs and rest. Hmm. And despite eating less than half of a meal at every dinner, I was bloating and gaining weight because of the fluids that were increasing.
Yeah.
There are other symptoms that could be fatigue, back pain, irregular menstrual periods, shortness of breath, or unexplained weight gain or weight loss. But unfortunately, these are also symptoms of other things. So sometimes you have to be pretty forceful with your doctor and say, hey, I want to make sure that this is not ovarian cancer. Mm-hmm. So knowing the symptoms is very helpful, that when you go into your doctor, you can request certain tests.
Exactly, exactly.
I can tell you a little bit about those if you want to hear what the tests are.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Your doctor should order what's called a transvaginal ultrasound, which is like an internal ultrasound rather than just on your belly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a blood test called a CA125 that can determine the level of ovarian cancer in your blood. Unfortunately, it goes up and down with a few other things as well, but it's a decent indicator for many women. And they would do a manual pelvic exam. One thing to make sure you understand is that a pap smear detects cervical cancer. It does not detect ovarian cancer. I had a clear pap smear
mm-hmm.
the day I went into the doctor to be examined for the ovarian cancer. So even if you're having your regular pap smears, you could be coming down with mm-hmm. ovarian cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And another very important thing, if you are diagnosed with ovarian cancer, you should find a gynecological oncologist to treat you. Women who see a GYN oncologist have much higher survival rates than women whose GYN just does the surgery. And mm-hmm. that happens sometimes, but if you are in a rural area, it's worth your time to find a GYN oncologist in a larger city.
Mm-hmm.
We're very fortunate in Michigan that we have a lot of GYN oncologists, not only in the Detroit area, but in outlying areas, Saginaw, Grand Rapids, Traverse City, the west side of the state. We have a lot of of GYN oncologists in,
right.
in Michigan.
Right.
And if you're somewhere else, because I understand that your radio show can be played anywhere,
yes.
You should Google a GYN oncologist before you take any other steps.
Is there a website where people could go to get more information about ovarian cancer?
Yes. I belong to a group that I've gotten very involved with since I've been diagnosed. It's called MIOCA, which stands for the Michigan Ovarian Cancer Alliance. I am going to send you a link for them that you can put on your website.
Okay.
One of the links will be to the symptoms page so that people can find that very quickly if they want to look up the symptoms. But the nice thing about the MIOCA website is that there are a lot of resources on the website as far as support groups, resources where women can go for general information, for clinical trials, for financial help while going through cancer, groups that help you handle your family issues while you're going through this, because it's not just the patient who's got ovarian cancer.
Absolutely.
Your whole family is dragged through that. So I will provide you with the MIOCA link for your webpage.
Okay.
And one of the things I like about this organization is that their mission is to save women's lives by promoting early detection and improved treatment outcomes for ovarian cancer. They raise awareness, they provide resources and support to survivors and families, they educate Michigan communities on ovarian cancer, and they fundraise for ovarian cancer research. In fact, in 2017 alone, they've awarded over $100,000 in grants, research
wow.
grants for ovarian cancer research.
Spectacular.
Yes. that's one of the things I like about it. It's a group that does what it says
right,
they're going
right.
to do. One of the ways that they support ovarian cancer patients is with tote bags that we have given to GYN oncology offices around the state, that when a woman is newly diagnosed with ovarian cancer, they get this tote bag that has a bunch of different goodies in it that we think would be helpful. One is a folder full of testimonials from women who have been through this and the offer to help whenever needed.
Mm-hmm.
When I got the tote bag, I got a nice teal color because teal is the ovarian cancer color. A teal fleece blanket that I, you know, cover with when I'm watching TV. There were activities to do while you're getting chemo. So one of the, you know, at the time there was a coloring book with crayons, not crayons, colored pencils in it. Something to keep you busy. And there's just some other little things that are nice to have.
Right.
While you're going through chemo and trying to figure out your new world.
You also know that you're not alone.
Exactly.
Which is very important.
Exactly.
Right. Let's talk about the Wheels and Teal coming up on Saturday. And then I know there's one other point we want to cover. But let's talk about the event.
Okay.
And those people who are out there driving down or up Michigan Avenue, there are teal ribbons from Outer Drive to...
There are teal ribbons from Outer Drive to Brady. There are also teal ribbons in front of the Henry Ford Centennial Library, the police station, up to Greenfield.
Okay.
And if you've walked or you are anywhere near the old City Hall, there are teal ribbons there. There are also teal ribbons on military from Michigan up to Cherry Hill.
Okay. All right.
And that is part of an awareness exercise that we call Tie Michigan Teal. You may notice in other cities, I know Garden City has teal ribbons on, I believe, Ford Road, their city of Berkeley, city of Rochester, a number of cities in the state have teal bows on their either tree trunks or light posts
mm-hmm.
to bring awareness to ovarian cancer.
So we're almost out of time. Tell us about Saturday. Saturday's
okay.
exciting.
Yes, there is an event called Wheels and Teal. It's the 6th annual event that is being held at the Village of Rochester Hills. It's a shopping center on the corner of, I believe, Adams and University. That Part of it, the wheels part, is that we have invited over 60 drivers of teal or turquoise cars to come and show their cars. Last year was the first year I went, and it was a lot of fun. These cars are just, they're mostly from the 50s and 60s, so you get to see these neat old cars. Mm-hmm. And their drivers are obviously very proud of what good shape they're in and will tell you all about their cars. And so for any car buffs, that's a plus. There's also a 5K run walk that you can participate in or not. That's up to you. There will be raffle prizes, a silent auction. I know we have a bagpiper who I believe is from the Dearborn area, whose wife passed away from ovarian cancer, but he comes and plays at our event every year.
Does he have a teal kilt?
No, he has a Scottish kilt that's red and whatever other colors.
Yeah, they're usually red and blue and red and green.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. We ought to get him a teal one, see if he'll wear it.
Sure.
So the event is on Saturday, this Saturday, September 16th. It's in the morning. The race starts at 9:30, and the events go till about 1:30 in the afternoon. You are able to register online at wheelsandteal.com. And that's another link that I will have you put into on your website.
Okay.
You can go just for the cars. Yeah. We are sponsored by a lot of the businesses in that mall and in the area there. Mm-hmm. You are able to register for the walk online up till September 15th. Which is the day before. Mm-hmm. But we also take same day registrations. So you can, if you decide you have nothing else to do on a nice sunny Saturday morning, and it's supposed to be sunny this year.
It's supposed to be gorgeous this weekend.
Yes. Yeah. Please come up and support our group. The silent auction items are phenomenal. There's a pair of $800 Ippolita earrings, which are supposed to be very fancy.
Okay.
I've seen them. They look very fancy. There's a there's a grill that you could win. There's a number of very nice prizes that we've had donated.
Mm-hmm. Is this a silent auction? Or
There's a tin can raffle type of thing silent auction.
Oh,
there are two separate parts to the prizes. And this is one of many events going on, not only in the state of Michigan, but around the country, to bring awareness and fundraise for ovarian cancer. Mm-hmm. For your members or your listeners who might be farther out of state, Grand Rapids has a run, walk, or bike-a-thon that's for, it's called Shake Your Teal Feathers. There are a number of golf outings that will raise money for ovarian cancer, at least in Michigan. There's a zoo walk on Sunday that's early in the morning. The group there is called the Belinda Sue Fund. They raise money mostly for ovarian cancer research, but they're having a zoo walk on Sunday. So there are a lot of events in the state.
And we can find information on the Myosha?
Myoka, MIOCA.org. And I will send you the link so you have the main link and that you have the symptom link, because I feel it's important for women to be able to see if their symptoms correspond with ovarian cancer symptoms. And then I'll give you a link to the Wheels and Teal page. And if people aren't able to walk but are interested in helping raise funds for ovarian cancer awareness, I'll give you a link for our fundraising page too.
I did check out the page with the vehicles and the cars and trucks that are all the teal and the turquoise colors. It makes you smile when you take a look at them.
Yeah.
So yeah, and you can always see a Bel Air in that color anyway. I mean, it just makes sense that would be
one of the cars.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have just about a minute, and I know one of the things we talked about on break was the impact of insurance and not having insurance, and this disease doesn't discriminate.
No, it doesn't. You can get ovarian cancer whether you have insurance or not. the one issue that I believe is most important is called oral parity for pills versus chemotherapy. Right now, Michigan is one of 7 or 8 states that does not have this oral parity for chemotherapy drugs. And what that means is that your insurance is required to pay for your infusion of chemotherapy, but they are not necessarily required to pay for chemotherapy in pill form. And many of the new drugs that are being developed are in pill form. So that's a very important thing that we, MEOCA, have gotten together with the American Cancer Society, breast cancer groups, to advocate at the state of Michigan for them to please bring this issue up and vote on it so that Michigan isn't one of the last 5 states in the country to offer this life-saving benefit.
Right. Very quickly, do you personally, did you feel a difference in your body when you were on the liquid chemo, I guess I'd call it, versus the pills? Did you feel a difference? Did you feel stronger, weaker?
No.
Or not really a difference?
No, I would say not a difference. The biggest difference was going from one drug to the other, and there's always there are always different side effects when you go from one drug to the other.
Of course.
But yeah. I can't put that down to it being pills versus an infusion. Okay. Although an infusion happens once a month, and I would always feel bad for the first week and then better for the 3 weeks after.
Okay.
But taking a pill twice a day, I feel like I'm getting the drugs all the time.
Right. Well, Julie, thank you so much for being here today with Impact. And thank you all for listening to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Look at me.